Today on Power Tips Unscripted, we talk to Matthew Pollard, CEO of Rapid Growth Coach and author of the best-selling book, Introvert's Edge, How the Quiet and Shy Can Outsell Anyone. Networking has been called the number one rule of business success, and that's just fine for those outgoing high-I personality types, like Victoria. But what is the less-than-sociable remodeler supposed to do? Well, Matthew's written a new book in the Introvert's Edge series that addresses just that, and he'll share some of the secrets inside in just a minute.
You had me at hello.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Hi, I'm Victoria Downing, and welcome to Power Tips Unscripted, where we talk about tips, tactics, and techniques to help you build a strong, profitable remodeling company. And I'm here with my co-host, Mark Harari.
Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. You know, it's a little different recording this in two separate locations, like back in the early days of the pandemic.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do sometimes. You're the one that had to go traveling,
right?
So you're doing the responsible thing.
We've got an awesome topic for us today, something that's dear to my heart, you know, the art of networking.
Yeah, except the thing is that's so funny is you think everybody's like you. Running around
should be like
excited.
This will help them.
And yeah, well, I'm thinking it should help because we have quite a few members and remodelers out there that come to our events, well, at least pre-pandemic, that really just kind of sat on the, what do you call it, a wallflower? Didn't want to get off the wall? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you always were the one pulling them off the wall saying, it'll be okay, come on, let's go network.
That's right. So I have a feeling that our guest today is going to give them a lot more powerful ammunition than me dragging them around introducing them to people.
I think you're right.
Dive in?
Dive away.
All right. Today, our guest is Matthew Pollard. He is called The Real Deal by Forbes magazine. He's the best-selling author of The Introvert's Edge, which is Amazon's eighth most sold book of the week and Book Authority's number two best introvert book of all time. I never knew they had a list like that. Today, he's going to be sharing with us some secrets for how the quiet and shy can outsell everybody. So, Matthew, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
So, Matthew, your book was a runaway success at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to write it and why you think it's so successful? And that book was The Introvert's Edge. The new book is The Introvert's Edge to Networking. So the original book, why did you write that?
Absolutely. So, I mean, for me, the major driver behind it was me speaking at so many presentations where I talked about what I call the three steps to rapid growth. And funnily enough, when I first came to the US, I spent a lot of my time talking to builders. And, you know, I talk about how they need to differentiate and how they need to niche down to stop being constantly competing on price. And the problem that I then said is that the third thing is you need to learn how to sell, because I think, you know, remodelers, custom home builders, they all do the same thing. They clutter the conversation with all this industry jargon and complexity, and the customer feels like they're just experiencing this fire hose of information. It just becomes overwhelming. But what happened was, when I spoke about niche marketing and differentiation, by the time I got to that part of the presentation where I was about to speak to sales, you could almost see everyone in the audience looking at me going, that guy's an extrovert. It's easy for him. He's just got that natural gift of gab. But for someone like me, it's not going to be just as easy. And, you know, I think this happens, you know, a lot of introverts struggle with this, but extroverts that are first time selling themselves can actually feel pretty uncomfortable in the art of selling as well. So I actually talked about my own personal story about, you know, how I had a reading speed of a sixth grader in late high school, how I was horribly introverted, you know, how I got diagnosed with this thing called Erlen syndrome, which means I put on this pair of funny colored lenses and miraculously I can learn to read. But being the slow kid with the funny lenses, the acne and braces at that stage wasn't exactly, you know, huge for my confidence. But, you know, after losing my job just before Christmas and the only job I could get was commission only sales, how, you know, I went from 93 doors for my first sale to, you know, going to becoming the number one salesperson in the company just 6 weeks later, closing a sale on average every three doors. And then, you know, fast forward a decade, being responsible for five multi-million dollar success stories. And then I'd start talking about sales. And what was interesting is people would come up to me afterwards, and while they love the content, introverts specifically would come up to me and say, Matt, I just had no idea that success was even possible for me as an introvert. I didn't know I could sell. And I kept telling every sales leader that I knew that somebody needed to write a book on introverted selling. And what was interesting is everyone said, no one's going to buy a book on selling as an introvert. Like introvert, the last thing they want is a book on sales. And I went, well, firstly, I understand niche marketing because there are 2,000 books that are written for extroverts and there's none written for us introverts. But on top of that, I mean, there are so many business owners that want to have a business that revolves around them, their family, and their life, not the other way around. And they don't know how to sell. And I mean, let's face it, if it's just you and your computer, if you don't see any salespeople, you're the salesperson, right? So the whole focal point for me was I knew that this book needed to be written, but with my reading issues, I was like, there's no way I'm going to write it. Well, luckily enough, I worked with a ghostwriter out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he was a client of mine. And, you know, I took him from making $27,000 in 2013 and $12,000 when he reached out to me in October. So he made $40,000 within 2 weeks, $80,000 within 6 weeks, $120,000 by the end of the year, and just shy of $300,000 the following year. And he's like, Matt, you have to write this book. Like these concepts need to be put in to something that introverts can grab hold of and really leverage in their business. And so I begrudgingly agreed that we should write the book together, which is horrible for me in my reading speed. I mean, he'd write 5,000 words for a chapter. I'd have to listen to it with a robot voice. And then I would then write 3,000 words, 5,000 words worth of comments. And then up and back this would go until eventually the book launched. And I think the real reason why this book was successful is, firstly, it's the only book in its category. So, I mean, it has really no competition. But secondly, it's based on real-world stories. Like every single story in the book is of a real introvert that likely is struggling much more than most of the introverts listening and how they got to the success. I mean, there's people with chronic stutters in there that were making no money that less than a year later had nearly a seven-figure business. There were, you know, actually there's a story, there are builders that have gone from 6 million to 18 million in 12 months, all because they're leveraging this sales system. And I think it's the fact that it reads like a novel, so it's not confronting to learn, but B, it's full of real stories. There's no, you know, it's not theoretical, it's not jargon, it's just a step-by-step process that really leads you to a sale. And I think that is what led it to the success that it achieved.
Now, in your world, how do you define introvert versus extrovert?
It's a good question. So I think psychologists have confused it way too much. I think that yes, there are lots of ways to define it, but the problem is that, you know, that you start to get into, well, am I shy? And, you know, am I highly sensitive? There's too much confusion out there. So I like to bring it back to simple terms and say, if you charge up by being with people, then you're an extrovert. If you charge up by being by yourself, then you're an introvert. Now, for me, I founded an event a few years ago. It's called Small Business Festival. It was listed by Inc. as the number 3 conference in America for small business. And Jim Cathcart, the number 1 speaker in the world, is a personal friend of mine. And he came and he was the closing speaker for our first event. And, you know, he was involved in the event for nearly 3 days, and so was I. And here was the difference. At the end of that, he was so charged up, he wanted to go and experience the live music capital of the world in Austin, which is where the event was placed. Me, on the other hand, I wanted to put on a hoodie, go to a dark room and watch Netflix, and that's it. Now, of course, he was my guest, so I had to go with him. I've never in my life had to ask a 7-year-old for permission to go home at midnight, but I was so tired. And that, to me, is the only difference. For introverts listening, I want you to know, you can still sell. You can still network. You can still speak from stage. You can still do podcast interviews like this. As a matter of fact, I believe that you can actually outperform your extroverted counterparts as long as you don't try and do it like them. The difference is, just like a kid at Disneyland, you might be exhausted afterwards.
Yep. Okay. All right. Great. So you've written a new book, which is the second in the series, which focuses specifically on networking. Why do you think that this is a struggle and despised by introverts?
I think it's because of the way they see networking. I mean, if you think about the way networking has become, you get two groups of people, really. You've got those transactional networkers that walk. I mean, they're the ones you're seeing during the COVID world on LinkedIn, just saying, buy from me from direct messages. I even had one person the other day that connected with me. I accepted. They sent me a sales pitch. I said, no, thank you. And then they wrote back, well, there's no reason to be even connected with you then. And they unconnected with me. And I was like, wow. But this is what happens in the networking room as well, right? I mean, we have these people that are literally walking around the room going, do you want to buy from me? No. Do you want to buy from me? No. Do you want, what about you? And it's, no one wants to be like that. So you get this other group, and you know, obviously all the introverts pretty much sit in this category, but a lot of the extroverts do as well, right? It's desperation that a lot of times turns them into that person. So these are what I call aimless networkers. And these people are either the wallflowers, like you suggested, or they're the other people that are still in and involved in conversations with people, but they're having these loose conversations where they don't get into what they do that much. And they're just trying not to be salesy. But the problem is that leaves them walking out of the room with 10, 20 business cards of people that want to be their friends, but they've already got enough friends they don't have time to catch up with. So they put the cards on their desk and say, well, when they contact me, I'll work with them. Of course, they never do. So that gets people to go, well, networking, you know, it just doesn't work. The truth is it does work. People are just doing it wrong. So what I talk about in the new book is what I call strategic networking. And for the introverts at home, you know, it really allows you to channel your empathy, your ability to actively listen, which are all advantages we have over our extroverted counterparts. But it gives you a system that powers all of those natural abilities. So the whole focus for me is I believe that 90% of all networking happens before you even walk in the room. These days, especially in our technology-enabled world, you can know who's going to be in the room, what the event's about. You can research the people you're going to see. You can plan out what you're going to say in a regimented way so that when you go, for you, while to everyone else it seems like an organic conversation, for you it's like Groundhog Day. You're having the same similar conversations over and over again, especially if you know the niche of people you mean to serve. So by introducing what I call strategic networking, it does two things. The first thing is it allows an introvert to not get stuck in their head and realize that there is a regimented system that they can follow. But secondly, I mean, let's face it, for all networkers, the fact is most people can't articulate the value of what they do in a 3-minute conversation when somebody's politely listening to what they say. So when they go into virtual networking, when somebody gives them half a second before disqualifying them, what chance do they have? So because of that, I mean, the book really focuses on helping you become incredibly clear in the networking room and understanding the power of networking and the way to do it well, but then shows you how to leverage that into the virtual world so you never have to go networking again. Well, unless you want to.
Okay, great. So when people are thinking about going to an event and networking in whatever format, should they be starting out with a specific goal in mind?
Well, so the first thing is that they shouldn't go in with the goal that everyone's going to be a customer. And I think that for me, well, firstly, I mean, this happens all the time. People go and they don't do any research before they go into the room. So for me, you know, I'll go on, like if it's a meetup.com event, I'll hop on meetup.com, look at all the profiles of the people that are going. And I know this seems like a wasted hour, but I can waste an entire hour at the event speaking to the wrong people unless I do this research. So I'll hop on LinkedIn, I'll look at the profiles, I'll connect with them beforehand, I'll start a little bit of a dialogue about the fact that I'm going to the event and I'm looking forward to meet them. Or, you know, if it's, you know, if they've got a Facebook group and no meetup, I'll just look at the photos and the people that are tagged and I'll connect with them there. There's lots of different ways to connect up front and start dialogue with people. And because of that, I already know who I'm, you know, going into the room to meet, right? So that really allows you to treat a networking event like a series of pre-planned meetings. But the second thing is you need to realize that everyone, as I said, isn't a prospect. So prospects are actually the worst types of people to meet. Now, of course, we need customers. I get that. But if I was to meet you, Victoria, in a meeting at a networking room, for me, turning you into a partner that introduces me to people and I introduce you to people because we both believe in the work that each other is doing is far more powerful. This is what I call a momentum partner relationship. Or if, you know, my brand was just developing and you putting me on your podcast would A, give me credibility, but then put me in front of a ton of people that could become my potential clients. So what happens is people go, oh, I'm going there to buy, you know, to sell to customers. And what they're actually doing, well, what they should be doing is finding these momentum partners or these champion relationships, people that share their work with others and you do so for them, or people that give credibility to their work. And because of that makes them have this higher level profile and introduces them to possible clients. So that's the first thing that I would suggest is go in with the goal that you're there to foster relationships. The next thing I would say is most people go in with this goal of I need to make a sale. Now, if you're at a networking event, and I do this all the time when I'm doing role plays with my clients, and I'll be sitting there having a dialogue with them, and I'll take them through this structured process of how I get them to explain what they do, talk about their passion, their mission, and tell a story. And then I test them, and I'll say, yeah, Victoria, that sounds amazing. How do I work with you? And then, of course, they'll start explaining how to work with you. And, oh, Bob, I'm so glad to see you. And, they just got interrupted. And I say, no, never fall into that trap of saying that, you know, getting into a sales conversation. Because, firstly, they're going to hate you for that because they came to meet network and network with people too. Secondly, you're going to get interrupted. And third, who wants to buy something at a networking event? Why not you set up a meeting, and if you push back at them, they're more likely to want to meet with you, and they'll appreciate the fact you didn't jump on them like a cobra. So that is hugely important to understand that it's not a sales activity. And the third is, in my mind, it's to not commoditize yourself from the moment you meet someone. And I think that this is a huge problem for a lot of people. Somebody will walk into a room and say, well, what is it you do? And you'll say, oh, I'm a business coach, or I'm a ghostwriter, or gosh, you say, oh, I sell insurance. And, you know, especially if you say you sell insurance, people will look at you like their eyes are screaming, like, how do I get away from this person? And the problem is everybody does it. And the problem is that if you instantly commoditize yourself that way, you're making the biggest mistake in networking. So for me, the biggest goal is to help everybody see you as something that's completely different to everyone else. And actually, you know what? Because I kind of slammed insurance people, I'll give you an insurance example. You know, while I predominantly work with people, you know, that are introverted service provider business owners, I had this introverted insurance salesperson that worked for an organization come to me. He said, Matt, I've got a real problem. This is literally the guy that said, when I say to people in a room that I sell insurance, I see their eyes scream. And I said, okay, well, I understand that. But I mean, that's because you're commoditizing yourself the moment you walk into the room. So let me ask you a question. Let's bring you back to a little bit of passion and mission, because you got into this for a reason. Why did you get into this? And he said, well, I just want to help people. I said, okay, yep, to surface level, let's go a little bit deeper. Do you care more about helping, you know, the people that are struggling by at $50,000 a year, or the people that are making $250 a year? His response, well, the $250, because I'd be able to sell them more stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, you can't really say, I really want you as a customer because I really want to buy my Bentley. So because of that, let's go a little bit deeper. What about the person that spent all their youth studying hard to get into Harvard, graduating at Harvard, and getting that C-level executive job that pays them $250,000 a year, versus the person that struggles to start their own business, employs other people, grows to a point they're earning $250,000 a year? Which one of those are you more passionate about? And he said, well, obviously the business owner. I said, why obviously? They both worked really hard. He said, well, I just feel like they deserve it more. And I'm like, explain that to me. Next thing we know, we're talking about his grandfather that owned a farm, and how he hustled to start the farm, and how he employed all these people, and then he got sick and he had to sell the farm, and how he watched his grandfather just really die in an apartment on a couch watching TV for the last 10 years of his life. Horrible. And I said, okay, so it sounds like you're really motivated to help people like that not live, the hustlers of the world, not lead themselves to really unhappy retirements. But your grandfather, I mean, he didn't die. How would life insurance help these people? And he said, well, because of my grandfather, I found all these policies where I could put this money into a life insurance policy, get a high yield return, and then leverage that into commercial real estate. I said, mate, you seem to know so much about this. So why don't we, instead of calling you an insurance salesperson, let's call you the hustle lifeguard. When people ask what that is, talk about your passion and mission for helping the hustlers of this world not unprioritize their retirement and end up in an unhappy retirement like your grandfather. Well, as soon as he started doing that at networking rooms, people that weren't even in his niche were like, oh my gosh, I don't really own my own small business, but could you help me anyway? And all the small business owners saw him as the only logical choice. By sidestepping the commodity battle in a networking room, it doesn't matter who you're meeting, it puts you in a different playing field. And that means that you can charge higher prices, you're more likely to find momentum partners, and there's always going to be those champions that want to get you in front of their audience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, it'd be really interesting to have you do that process with a couple of our remodelers and help them get to their passion. But it sort of ties into the TED talk, the seven whys, you know,
I think it's five whys.
That's right. So what happens, you know, one of the things that I see happening a lot at networking events is that someone who isn't real keen on networking, they know they should, but they're uncomfortable. So they'll find themselves in a corner with the one person that's willing to stand there and talk to them and them alone for the next hour, blowing their opportunities to network with others. How do you get them out of that? What do you say to those people who just always fall into that?
Well, so the first thing is, it's because they fall into it that they have that problem. See, what happens with the average introvert is that they know that they have to go to a networking event, and there's been a catalyst event that caused that to happen. Maybe they lost their job and they need a new one. Maybe they can see that their pipeline's looking relatively thin. Maybe it's like my client Whitney, who literally lost three of her four clients, went from $120,000 a year in income to $30,000 income in 2 months. Whatever it is that causes you to want to go networking, you then go in online and you look for a networking event that you can go to. So you then put it in your calendar, and because you don't want to go, you put it furthest from your head as possible, and you don't think about it until your calendar pops up and says, you must leave for this event in 15 minutes. And then you spend the next 15 minutes fighting with yourself about whether you really need to go, whether things are really that tough that you want to go and do this uncomfortable thing. So then you get in the car and you go, and you tell yourself that going to the networking event is the thing that's going to make you successful. So you then go and you begrudgingly then go in completely unprepared, and then you stand next to someone and then you walk out later going, well, that didn't get me the results. Why would I go to any more at networking events? So you then make the decision that things aren't as bad as you think, and maybe you'll just grind it out a little bit longer, hoping for things to improve. Of course, they never do. And then you end up back in the same situation. That is why you get stuck standing next to one person. See, for me, when I know I have a networking event coming up, then, well, if I know I want to go networking, I will look for the right events. So the first thing is, when you talk about, you know, remodelers, it's really interesting. You know, so many remodelers, they're like, oh, I'll do everything for anyone. We just need jobs. The problem is that saying I do, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 small remodelers. I had one client that did multi-million-dollar custom home builds. They did remodeling work, and they also built like playhouses in the kids. And they had all three of those on their website. So when people came to their website, it didn't really matter where you fit in that spectrum, you knew that they were a jack of all trades and a master of none. So a lot of my clients do custom home builds for multi-million dollar, you know, home builds. And I mean, they're not going to the same networking events that some of my other clients that are doing, you know, a couple of $100,000 remodels are going to, mm-hmm. right? There are different requirements. And because of that, you know, there are different socioeconomic reasons. There are different alumni groups that they can go to. Yeah. They're part of different social clubs. Everything is different. So when I decide I need to go networking, the first thing is I say, okay, so what's my differentiator? What's my niche? Now that I remember that, where are my avatar people more likely to hang out? Okay, so let's go looking for those. I mean, it might be the symphony. It might be, you know, the local box at a sporting team. It doesn't really matter where. It's, you've got to really be specific about the groups that you're going to. Then what I do is I then go looking at those events, and I decide which event that I want to go to or which events I want to go to. Mm-hmm. Then what I do, because it's great to have momentum, so I'd like to prefer to go to a couple of events in 1 week and then nothing for 3 weeks, then going to one a week, it drives me nuts. Then what I'll do is I'll say, okay, I'm going to these events. So let's have a look at all the people that go to those events. So I look at Facebook profiles, I look at LinkedIn, and I research the people going to room, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to stay away from that person, he sells insurance. This person, on the other hand, this is the exact type of person that I'd really like to meet. Oh, this person looks like they just moved to Austin. This person looks like they just moved to Chapel Hill, whatever the country you live, state you live in is. So I start to understand them. And then, you know, I mean, I fostered a wonderful relationship with one of the head, you know, senior vice presidents at Dell, because I checked him out. And then I typed in his name in Instagram and realized he was really into Peloton. I'm not really into Peloton, but we keep talking about the fact that we see all these commercials for Peloton. So I made sure that that came up in a conversation, and he talked about Peloton for 30 minutes. Now he feels like he's got a great relationship with me. I could talk about whatever I want for the next 30. Now, the thing you need to realize is the next thing is you now know where you're going and who you want to speak to, but you don't know what to say. So for instance, for Nick, he goes out now and he says, I am the hustle lifeguard. I say I'm the rapid growth guy, because when I say I'm the rapid growth guy, people will say, oh, what exactly is that? And then I have a short prepared statement that talks about my passion for helping the introverted service provider, you know, not get stuck in that constant hamster wheel of setting themselves apart, finding interested prospects and trying to make the sale, all while knowing that they're generally competing on just one thing in the customer's mind, price. And then I talk about my mission for helping people realize that they can succeed, but not by focusing on getting better at their functional skill, but instead focusing on just three things. And I go, you know what? And then I actually act like I'm annoyed with myself for getting into the jargon. And then I'll say, you know what? And I interrupt myself. And then I tell the story of Wendy and how she was struggling to make $50 to $80 an hour as a language coach, and how I transformed her to selling a $30,000 package for the easiest sale in the world, all through referral. And people are like, oh my gosh, I need that. But I've prepared all of that. I've explained, I've worked out what my message is. I've gone to the right networking events so that they're actually interested. I have a mission and passion statement that entices people, followed by a story. And I know that when I get there, enough about them to start a dialogue where I've asked them so many questions about them up front, or even if I've never met them, I make it all about them to the point that they say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I haven't asked you what you do. What is it you do? Where I respond, thanks for asking. Oh, I'm the rapid growth guy. And now they feel indebted to ask me questions, but they're also actually interested, which is helpful. Because if I said, oh, I'm a business coach, they would probably say, oh, I had business coaching before. It didn't really work for me. And now I've got to what? Convince and cajole them that I'm different. What? That I've got magic ruby slippers. Like, no one cares. So instead, all of a sudden I've changed the balance. Because in truth, you know, I'm a branding expert. I'm a marketing specialist. I'm so many things. But no one cares about that. They don't care how hard it is that it was for me to learn these things, how long I spent learning them. But when I say I'm the rapid growth guy, the simplicity of that message gets me heard in the crowded market, and it gets people to engage in what I want to say.
Matthew, I got a question that I know all our listeners are thinking right now. So I'm going to ask on their behalf. Are you really an introvert?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you would probably be my 153rd interview if I was going to pick a number at random. Mm-hmm. And if you think that, well, there are differences to every conversation that I have. And to you, I hope that it sounds as organic as any other interview that you do. However, I'm using the same stories that I've told many times before. I'm answering similar questions that I've answered before. Now, sure, any good interviewer, like you both are, will ask unique questions that come from what their thoughts are around the topic matter that I discussed. But I've already thought through what all those variations could be. And I can tell you, when I did my first 10, I researched their show flow. I, you know, listened to a whole bunch of interviews that they'd done in the past so I could get an understanding of what they considered their unique personality. But again, most of the people are predictable once you start to look at multiple shows. Mm-hmm. And I then worked out how to interview. Now I realize that people don't want on a podcast interview to be hammered with a fire hose of information. They want to hear some stories. They want to be excited, inspired. They want to hear some stories that make things relevant to them and feel tangible. That's all you can do in a podcast interview. What happens, I find, is a lot of people come on to podcast interviews. They ram pack full of information that nobody can retain, or they do this full sales pitch. Now that I know what my job is on this, in a lot of ways, I actually did script out the first few. Now I'm still running off a lot of those repeat scripts. Now, sometimes somebody will ask me a question I'm not expecting, and I've got a notepad right here next to me. I'll always write down the question that you asked me that I did not expect that, and you know, I'm not infallible. Sometimes people ask me a question that, you know, occasionally I'll bomb out on the answer because introverts get stuck in their head. So I'll write it down afterwards. It's usually those joke statements that people make for me. I just don't get them. So I have to look at the context what they are afterwards, and I'll write it down, and then I'll work out what the best thing to say to that would be. And then I'll practice it over and over again so that next time it happens, it never happens to me again. Now, I mean, I haven't thought twice about being on this interview because there's really, and you know, a lot of times I'll get onto an interview and they'll say, my questions, you know, I may not follow the question flow specifically. And I'm like, to be honest with you, mate, I haven't looked at your question flow, but feel free to ask me any question you like because I don't hold back. I want you to ask me what benefits your audience. And now I feel comfortable enough saying that. That came with practice and preparation, not with being extroverted. And what's interesting is, and this is key, as an introvert, I have these huge abilities to empathize and listen. And some people might say extroverts aren't the best at those things. Now, sure, they can go and get coaching to do that. But this is what vexes me about the introvert state of mind. We believe that anyone like this that's performing well on a podcast, on stage, in sales or in networking, we project extroversion on them. And we then say, oh, they're clearly closer to an extrovert than I am. So therefore, I can't do it. The truth is, I am as introverted as the average person. I'm exhausted after this, but I follow a regimented system. I mean, my favorite show watching, my favorite movie growing up was this movie called Short Circuit. And I remember that when he got struck, the robot got struck by lightning. They're like, robots don't have feelings. They don't get happy. They don't get sad. They don't love. They just run programs. Well, when I'm on a podcast, while I hope that it's organic for a lot of people, I just run programs and I try to keep it as organic as possible for everybody. But the way I answer questions always drives people back to the next question that I hope that they'll ask. And more often than not, I'm right.
That's good stuff. Well, Matthew, I can promise you one thing. You're going to get some questions you never expected in about 1 second.
Are you ready
for the lightning round?
Let's do it.
Okay.
And now, here's the Remodeler's Advantage Lightning Round.
It's a trap.
All right, we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock. Here we go. What is your favorite business book and why?
I love Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and that was because I used to listen to it around the dinner table, my parents talking about it. And for me, you know, I think mindset is everything when it comes to running a business.
If you weren't a thought leader in the introvert space, what do you think you'd be doing?
You know, it's funny, that question always gets me because if I hadn't have lost my job just before Christmas in Australia, where the only jobs I could get were commission-only sales roles, I would actually still happily be doing data entry in an admin role.
What are you not very good at?
I would say responding quickly to jokes off the cuff.
Your room, your desk, or your car? Which would you clean first?
If I had to clean my desk or my car, definitely my desk, because I think if my desk is messy, then my mind is messy. If my car's messy, then I actually really don't mind.
Name something you refuse to share.
Oh, I think you'll find that there's nothing I refuse to share. Maybe that I'm a little bit of a kid when I'm off camera. You know, I tend to become much more childlike. I think a lot of people will say, you know, that I'm, you know, I have great answers and I'm really good on stage and on the spot. And, you know, but I think that is why when I get home, I want to behave a little bit more immature.
What's the first four-letter word that comes to your mind?
Stop.
And that's a good one because we'll stop there.
All right, that's awesome, Matthew. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on introverts and how they can improve their networking skills. I'm sure people are going to pick up on a lot of great tips there. Now, before I let you go, however, I want you to share your 5 words of wisdom with our listening audience and tell us why they resonate with you.
Sure. I mean, my 5 words are introverts can outperform extroverts. And if the reason for why I would say that is I think that introverts are so used to feeling like second-class citizens, and there's just this stigma that introverts can't succeed. I mean, let's face it, if an extrovert's struggling, then everyone sends them to training, or they'll go out and send themselves to training if they run their own business. But for an introvert, they go, oh, he's an introvert, she's an introvert. They're just quiet by nature. There's nothing we can do. We'll just accept subpar performance. And for me, I believe that introverts can outperform extroverts in every leadership, in small business, in networking, in sales. And, you know, that's really my mission in life. It's why I founded National Introverts Week, which is the 3rd week of March. And it's so that we can stop going, oh, poor you, let me show you how to survive in an extroverted world and embrace the truth. It's our world. And we just need to learn the skills to dominate in it.
That's great. That's great. Very, very, they're very cool. So Matthew, before we go, if people want your books, especially your newest book, where would they go?
Absolutely. So obviously they're available at all major retailers, but my publisher hates me when I say this. You don't need to buy my books. You can go to theintrovertsedge.com to download the first chapter of my first book. And there is everything you need in the first chapter to help you get past your barriers about believing that you can sell. And I actually outline the full 7-step process. So if you do nothing more than just put in what you already say, and you'll realize some things don't fit. Throw that out. You shouldn't be saying it to clients. Some things might be out of order. Then you'll realize there's some gaps. And if you fill those gaps, then you'll double your sales in the next 60 days. And then go to theintrovertsedge.com/networking, where I'll help you, again, overcome your barriers towards networking and outline the process for you there as well. If you just start with those 2 free chapters, you'll be miles ahead of where you are right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, that was very interesting, wasn't it, Mark?
I thought it was funny because he does not strike me as an introvert.
Oh my gosh, no.
But, you know,
well,
I guess
like
that's
said,
the...
if it's all about the energy, he's probably passed out on the couch by now.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. The way he talks, he says, I'm exhausted afterwards. So he's probably curled up under his couch, under his desk right now.
Yeah. He probably had to pull that energy that he was demonstrating out of the marrow of his bones. You know?
I know. It's funny. But, you know, that's actually proof that, you know, you can be an introvert and people don't need to know it. Because
that's right.
You know, look,
that's right. I think he's right, though. I mean, I wouldn't have necessarily thought of introverts as being considered second class citizens, but certainly we have seen the challenges that introverts have at networking events that we have done over the years, right?
But it does make sense. I mean, I don't consider myself an introvert, so it never occurred to me to go buy his book and read it. But I'm almost interested to read it just for understanding, because it was what I kind of got out of it was that introverts more just suffer from like a fear of the shyness and all that stuff comes more from a fear of not being prepared to handle what comes at them, you know, like,
right.
'Cause he said he just studied a lot. He practiced his pitches. He knew what he was going to say so that he wasn't surprised. And,
right.
And so I don't know.
That to me was the key lesson is that you could tell he just doesn't leave it to chance. He does the work to prepare so he's ready.
Right. And it makes complete sense. I mean, how are you, if you take that fear out, which I don't even know if you call it fear. I don't know. I'm not going to speak to introverts because I'm not one. So I'm not going to guess. But,
you know, even if you're not an introvert, the networking tips he shared would help anybody.
No, absolutely. You should be prepared when you go, and you should know your elevator pitch, as many people call it. You know, you need to have your niche. You got to have all that stuff. You should have it spelled out, whether you're an introvert or not. So it was good stuff.
Yep, good.
Well, we want to thank Matthew the introvert for taking his time out of his busy schedule to share his insights. And we want to thank you for joining us week in and week out. I am Mark Harari.
And I'm Victoria Downing. See you next week.
This has been another episode of Power Tips Unscripted, the Remodeler's Guide to Business. Visit www.remodelersadvantage.com to learn more about Roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program. There you can also find information about our business consulting services, upcoming live events, and much more. And finally, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
It's a beautiful day.